Welcome to American Variety Radio. I'm your host, Court Lewis. You remember the spring of 2011 was a terrible time for the Midwest. I mean, there was this huge outbreak of tornadoes that really almost for the first time that I can recall went into cities, you know, like Joplin and Birmingham, Alabama, and tore them up. Well, the spring of 2013 was also bad. In particular, there were two killer tornadoes in late May, just days and only miles apart, that brought devastation to areas near Oklahoma City. So, you know, obviously that was big news, right? But the news was ratcheted up by the presence of a great many storm chasers who not only took video of the storms, but also became part of the news in the case of the El Reno tornado, as it was called, an F5 tornado in which three storm chasers were killed. So for the first time, storm chasers were killed. So we're going to talk with a veteran storm chaser about those events and the whole business of storm chasing in light of those events. Her name is Chris Kreidler. She was a longtime columnist for Florida Today newspaper who went out on her own a couple of years back as a freelance photographer and a writer-editor and now a novelist. Chris has published two books based on her true passion, which is storm chasing. And the latest book is called Tornado Pinball. Welcome, Chris.
Hi, Court. It's great to talk to you.
She's joining us from Florida and is just back from her latest jaunt out into Tornado Alley. But, you know, let's talk for a minute about your book. And like the first book, which was called Funnel Vision, Tornado Pinball is, you know, it's a very well-written book and has several strong characters, but they center around a smart, cocky, good-looking freelance storm chaser named Jack Andreas, who always has an angle on something, right? Often a woman, so there's usually a kind of a love story involved. Can you give us a quick Cliff Notes version of the Tornado Pinball?
Yeah, Jack is back from his stint in Funnel Vision, and I think readers will find him a little more sympathetic this time. I think he does a lot of growing up in this book, but he's a lot of fun. He's kind of a womanizer. He's kind of a bad boy, but he's also a brilliant storm chaser, and he gets hired by a TV crew that wants to perform the ultimate extreme stunt, which is putting a human tornado probe into a tornado. And this may seem crazy, but, you know, I would not be surprised if this is the next generation of storm chasing insanity as far as the small percentage of chasers who are into the extreme stunts in the TV shows go. So that's basically the plot, and you'll see some funny characters, including a failed tour operator who was in the first book, is now the star of this new show, and he's scared to death to be put into the twister. There's a TV producer who will do anything to make it succeed. There's an actress who is the co-host of the show who catches Jack's eye. So it's kind of a satire of the storm chasing world. But as with all the books, it's a love letter to storm chasing too.
Yeah. So it's maybe, as you say, satirizing it a little bit, but maybe not so much because sometimes truth comes to resemble fiction, right? So
it really does.
Yeah. So, you know, the Weather Channel has been kind of the engine that's driven this new phenomenon of storm chasing to a great extent. I mean, they have something called the Great Tornado Hunt, and in the El Reno tornado, as everyone probably remembers, their tornado chasing van became part of the story and was thrown off the road and rolled around, and everybody survived with some broken bones and cuts and so on. But they've got shows, The Storm Riders, Storm Stories, and then there was Storm Chasers that was on the Discovery Channel that I think has been canceled now. But these are adventure reality shows, and they've fed a whole new kind of, I guess, what I would call extreme sport, right? Chasing tornadoes. I don't know if it's a sport or not, but it comes across that way. And Chris actually is herself often interviewed on the Weather Channel about severe storms. I've seen her several times. So what's it like out there in Tornado Alley in the spring, Chris?
Well, extreme sport is an unfortunate term. A few chasers do seem to approach the hobby that way, so I certainly understand why people use that term. I've used it myself. TV shows eat up anything that looks extreme or crazy, so that's the way storm chasers end up being portrayed on TV. Hmm. There are a lot of storm chasers these days, but there are also a lot of locals who are out to get a look at the storm, and there's really a whole variety of people chasing.
How many years have you been doing it, and how has it changed over those years? Has it been like a real rapid change in the last couple of years?
Yeah, it really has. This is actually my 17th year chasing storms. It's hard to believe it's been that many.
Gosh,
but, you know, that's just a blink in the continuum when you look at a few guys were doing it back in the 50s and the 60s when basically all they had was maybe a map that they got from the Weather Service office in the morning forecast, and then they just used their eyes. Now there's so much technology. When I started, you'd go to a truck stop and do some dial-up and get on the internet for a few minutes and maybe get an update. Now with cellular data connections, we can have radar information right in our cars. It's really incredible.
Yeah, and that comes across in the shows and adds to the kind of the techno-adventure aspect of it. So you were near the El Reno tornado. What were conditions like? I mean, was it a dangerous situation for you where you were?
I had an uneasy feeling that day, even before the storms got going. There was so much potential energy for the storms in terms of heat and moisture. It actually felt like Florida, you know. The dew points were so high. The air just felt soggy. And the trigger was there. The strong dynamics were in place to foster strong tornadoes. So when this storm got going, at first it was like three little storms popped up just to the west of myself and my friends. And then one quickly became dominant. It just exploded in intensity. And later, of course, we learned that it not only produced a tornado, but a huge tornado that expanded from about a mile wide to a record 2.6 miles wide in about a minute while accelerating and jogging northeast. Now, I'm almost laughably cautious when it comes to chasing these things, and I was a few miles south of it. So I had trouble seeing the tornado because it was really wrapped in rain and haze and dust. It was just sucking in inflow like crazy. But, you know, I was paralleling it, and I could see it had amazing UFO structure that showed its intense rotation. And I'd heard about the Weather Channel vehicle being rolled, so I texted my friends, made sure they were okay since we had become separated. And my plan was to just drop south and west and kind of avoid Oklahoma City because nobody wants to chase storms in a city for obvious reasons. This seemed like a really rural area, and I just wanted to get into safe position. Well, as soon as I turned onto a south road, I got stuck in a horrific traffic jam of people fleeing the storm. And there were new circulations that I could see because I have radar in my car, you know, radar data. And I could see that if one of these circulations strengthened, it was going to pass right overhead. Fortunately, it didn't drop a tornado on my location, but that's when I was really terrified.
Was that about as scared as you've ever been in a tornado chasing situation?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it wasn't necessarily going to be a tornado, but the first one was so violent that I was worried that this new circulation would do the same thing. It could have been very bad.
So we have heard that there were traffic jams out there. You know, it's interesting. If you go to Chris's storm chasing website, she has a couple, and I'll give you the names later, but this one is chriskreidler.com. So it's chriskreidler.com, chriskreidler.com. And there's a number of things there. There's blogs there about, you know, very well-written journalist, columnist type of blogs, and also video. One video is from the Spotter Network that was an interesting thing. It shows the chasers themselves. I guess each of them is a blip on the chart, and it shows their movements, and it shows them fleeing the storm. I mean, it looks like, you know, I don't know, like a bait fish running from a shark or something, you know. This big blob of the storm is moving along in an erratic fashion, and the cars are going away and then filling in behind it and following it, and it's interesting to watch, but it definitely shows, even just from the spotter or chaser standpoint, how crowded it was. And when you add in all the other cars that were there, I guess it was just a crazy situation. I gather that one controversial aspect of that whole tornado and the coverage of it was that an Oklahoma City TV meteorologist advised people who were in the path of the storm. I haven't heard the actual broadcast, but I gather he said that if you don't have a storm shelter to go to in your house or nearby, then you should get in your car and head south. Is that more or less true? And then what happened as a result?
Yeah. In fact, I embedded a video of him telling people that in a blog entry I wrote about this day. And, you know, there were dozens of storm chasers around the storm, but chasers tend to stay out of each other's way, and they'll pull off on a shoulder or dirt road. They'll pull off out of the way so that they're not in other people's way. But there were so many other people on the road, and some of them were people just trying to get a look, which was not a good thing. We can talk more about that. But a lot of them were fleeing because of this advice given by K4TV. And I can understand people were really on edge because on May 20th, which was, you know, in very recent history at that time, an EF5 tornado had gone through Moore, Oklahoma, mm-hmm. and killed 24 people. And so when people heard they can't survive above ground, they have to drive south, which is bad advice, a lot of people felt compelled to do so. It's always better to have a plan that involves a shelter you can get into without driving somewhere. Very few tornadoes, like 1%, are of the kind of strength where being above ground is a scary thing to do. Hmm. You're generally going to be safer taking shelter in the lowest interior room of your house. It's really bad to be stuck in a car. A ditch is considered a last resort. And unfortunately, some people died in this storm because they took shelter in a ditch and there was flooding and they drowned, which is just a horrifying thing. So yeah, I mean, it just created a real potential disaster situation with hundreds of cars on the road, completely stopped in traffic on all the southbound roads, essentially coming out of Oklahoma City. And they were evacuating long into the night. It was really, really scary.
You're listening to American Variety Radio. I'm your host, Court Lewis. Yeah, so that added a whole new dimension to chasing storms or being chased by storms that wasn't there a few years ago when people, first of all, probably didn't even know they were coming in many cases, but also if they did, had 3 minutes warning. And, you know, I mean, it occurred to me after these storms that, you know, so often they'll flatten mobile homes, right? And then people get in the bathtub, and sometimes they're actually saved by that. It occurred to me that maybe Midwestern bathtubs ought to come with an accessory of like tie-down fittings where you can more or less buckle in.
Safe rooms have become more of a thing.
Yeah.
People are either retrofitting a closet or a bathroom, or they're including them in new construction if they don't have a basement.
Again, we're talking with Chris Kreidler, who is a tornado chaser by passion and a novelist by vocation. She's written a series called Storm Seekers, a series of books, and the second in the series just came out recently. It's called Tornado Pinball, and she's somebody who speaks from experience because she's been doing this, as she said, for 17 years out there chasing storms, severe storms, in particular tornadoes in Tornado Alley in the spring. Chris, what's the mix of people you meet out there? I mean, you alluded to the people who just came out to take a look, and then is there a hierarchy of real meteorologists, let's call them, and then students and faculty and serious hobbyists and just amateurs ranging from kind of knowledgeable amateurs down to completely people who should not be out there at all under any circumstance?
Yeah, it's really all of those folks. There are legitimate research projects who, you know, sort of hang on to their legitimacy as, yes, we have a right to chase storms. They're the tricked out TV-ready vehicles who are doing TV shows and web TV shows. There are people like myself who are there to really admire the storms, maybe take pictures. Sometimes there are van loads of students from different universities. There are van loads of tourists from different tour groups. Hmm. And now, of course, a disturbing number of regular people who just like have a cell phone and go out and see what they can see.
So how do these people get along when they're thrown together kind of in between storms while they're waiting or in the morning when they're sort of gearing up? I mean, are they all in the same little cafe in some little tiny town? Is there some uneasy kind of alliance, or is there a dissonance between them? Or how does it, you know, what's the vibe in those locales out there?
It's kind of interesting. I would say overall, it's pretty friendly because we all love storms. I mean, we all recognize that that's why we're there. We love the beauty of the plains and the beauty of these supercells. At the same time, there's always tension, the tension between the people who think they have a more legitimate right to be there than other people, or the tension between people who think that maybe the more extreme contingent shouldn't be so extreme. Hmm. Or, you know, there's always going to be gossiping and small pond syndrome where, you know, the little fish are nibbling at each other. But in all, there are so many chasers, and a lot of us know each other from online, if not in person. And when we meet, it's usually a happy thing. Actually, the El Reno day, I've never seen so many chasers gather in one location. Tons were coming in and out of this little town because it was such an obvious target that day.
Hmm. Is there a difference in your mind, Chris, between a, quote, professional storm chaser and an amateur? And if so, what is it? Is it a real fine line, or what are the distinguishing characteristics of the two?
it's difficult to define. You might call me a professional storm chaser because I sell video occasionally to help pay for the passion, but it's really not a full-time job for me or for most chasers. Mm-hmm. Only the TV stars and researchers who generally aren't chasing the rest of the year because it is seasonal might call it a full-time job. I and others like me are more likely to be called professional because we have the gear and experience, which is important, to chase safely and wisely, at least if we're doing it right, although we all make mistakes and, you know, bad things can happen. Mm-hmm. The term amateur storm chaser seems to be something the news media has come up with to help explain all the locals who are driving around looking at storms. There are more and more, and I'm really concerned for their safety. During the El Reno storm, I saw workers just off their shift, the cable guy with his blinky lights, and families out with their cell phones just trying to get a shot when they should have probably been seeking shelter. I know people love their weather and they probably pride themselves on their local knowledge, but the truth is that supercell storms are complex. They can behave in surprising and violent ways. And I'm a little worried that TV shows about storm chasing may have made it look too safe. And plus, people are out for the glory of the viral video, I guess. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, just because they think it would be cool. At least one quote-unquote amateur storm chaser was killed in the El Reno tornado as he was out taking cell phone pictures. I mean, from what I saw, he was definitely in the danger zone, and it caught him just as it caught more experienced chasers. And that's a sad story that nobody wants repeated.
Yeah, I would imagine that the TV shows have added to the glamour of it, and then the fancy tricked out vehicles. There are probably crowds of people following them. You know, like
there are, there are.
And then there's social media, you know, and then iPhones. I mean, it used to be that, you know, 20 years ago, very few people even had a video camera, and now, you know, everybody has one on their phone, and so they're out there making a video to then post to Facebook and show I'm here. You know, so those two things, probably the TV shows glamorizing it and the social media, I would suspect, have converged to bring a whole crowd of people, a whole herd of gawkers out to look at tornadoes.
It's really true. And it seems to be centered in Oklahoma, maybe southern Kansas, where you see more of that. I mean, I'm getting to the point, and so are some other chasers, I think, where we'd much rather chase in a more remote area and not have to worry about crowds than chase anywhere near the metro area.
You're listening to American Variety Radio. I'm your host, Court Lewis. We're talking with storm chaser Chris Kreidler from Florida, who lives in Florida, but who goes out to Tornado Alley every spring to do her thing and pursue her passion. She's a photographer, takes beautiful photographs of weather of all kinds, and particularly these severe storms. You can go to her website, chriskreidler.com, chriskreidler.com. Which talks more about her books. She's an author, too, and has written the second of a series of books called Storm Seekers, and her storm-chasing blogs are there. She also has a sister site called skydiary.com, spelled like it sounds, skydiary.com, which has more of the kind of stories and photos. Chris, is it an expensive pursuit for a freelancer like yourself? Is it, you know, what does it take, $20,000 to rig up your car in a way enough to do it safely, or can you do it on a pretty much shoestring budget these days?
You can do it as cheaply as you want to. I mean, I have friends who have tricked out their chase car with Lexan hail shields, which I know weren't cheap, but they can drive into hail cores, whereas I try to avoid hail cores. In other words, the baseball and softball size hail that can really mess up your car. But gas is really the biggest expense, if you know, assuming you're not driving a tank. And hotels, there's gear, there's cellular data plans, other costs. You can chase with very little technology if you want to, but since we can actually get radar data now whenever there's a cellular connection, your chances of success are much improved if you can invest in that technology.
Okay, so what is the minimal technology that you need to do it safely? Do you really need radar, or can you get away with the Weather Channel's map and GPS?
Well, minimal technology, I suppose, would be your eyes and some knowledge.
Yeah.
It's really good to understand storm structure, to kind of know where the wall cloud will form, which is sort of the area where you're likely to see a tornado, to understand where the hail core is, just to understand general storm motion, structure, evolution. If you have some knowledge, you can do it pretty safely. And in fact, I think radar has made us maybe a little too confident sometimes because we can see exactly where the circulation is. And you know, that lets us get closer than maybe we might have in the past. If a storm was rain wrapped and we couldn't see where the tornado was, we were probably less likely to drive into it. Not that I drive into it, but, you know, some people are tempted to do so.
Mainly those adrenaline-fueled guys.
Yeah, there are a few of those.
All right. So is this thing mainly, when you're out there, is it mainly a search for tornadoes? I mean, that's the impression I get. Or do chasers have a broader interest in all kinds of severe weather and tornadoes are just kind of the holy grail at the top of the list?
Yeah, tornadoes for most of us are really the icing on the cake. I mean, you always hope that if there is one, you're there to see it. But for me, I mean, great storm structure is really the best. There was a storm in Nebraska this year that was what you call an LP, low precipitation. It did not produce a tornado. It was a skinny little storm, but it had incredible structure, incredible lightning, a great photo opportunity, and it just lets you appreciate nature and the plains. And yeah, there are a few people who, if they don't see the tornado, then, you know, they feel like they've failed. But most people just have a great appreciation for the beauty of nature and the beauty of these storms as a whole.
Well, your books so far definitely focus on tornadoes. And at the center of it, as we mentioned, is a character named Jack Andreas. I guess I'm saying that right.
Who? Yeah, I think of it as Andreas, but, you know, each to his own.
He could be German. So, but he's a, you know, a good-looking, studly guy who's very much focused on the tornadoes, and he doesn't like all of the peripheral stuff that goes with what he has to do to make a living chasing tornadoes. But is he a pretty common type among, I guess, the male storm chasers, or maybe sexier than most of them? I don't know. Some of them seem, you know, but is he a common type, or is that a rarity, that type of really focused and, you know, testosterone-fueled guy?
I think he's exceptional in his storm chasing skills and also his relationships with women, which we're probably all grateful for. Mm-hmm. Those evolve in tornado pinball. But there is a contingent of the chase community that's driven by adrenaline-fueled, tornado-focused missions, guys who are out to show they have the baddest vehicle and can get a closer shot than anybody else. I think and hope that the tragedy at El Reno might temper that attitude a little bit. Because most chasers do just love the beauty of the storms, and, you know, they don't need to prove they have the biggest anemometer, so to speak.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you mentioned earlier the storm tours where people will take tourists out to try to chase a tornado, which, I mean, it reminds me of climbing Mount Everest, which, you know, 50 years ago was an elite pursuit that, you know, maybe three or four people a year would would attempt at peril to their lives, and now it's become a tour-guided operation with people taking, you know, school children and housewives up, and there are frequent accidents as a result, and people get caught by, you know, by the unexpected blizzard, and 10 people die or 2 people fall off a cliff. And, you know, so is it like that? I mean, what do you think about this, the popularity in general? Is it totally over the top and needs to back off?
You know, there are tours, and most of them are really responsible, and it is adults, you know. It's not like loading a big bus full of kids and driving them into a tornado. It's nothing like that.
Okay, good.
Yeah. And it's certainly not as dangerous as climbing Mount Everest. I mean, if you know what you're doing, you can do this really safely. I think that the popularity of it means that we as chasers need to consider not just how we chase, but where. I mean, I'm never going to chase within 50 miles of the Oklahoma City metro area again if I can help it. Hmm. You know, I thought I was in a rural enough area until I ended up in that traffic jam. At some point, you know, I hope there's no regulation of storm chasing because, well, first, I think it'd be really hard to enforce. Hmm. But second, most people are doing it responsibly. And if anything, I think just better education is needed of the public, especially on the dangers of storms, the dangers of driving in storms. And hopefully everybody can come out of this safer and wiser.
Yeah, I gather that meteorologist, the TV guy you mentioned, who gave bad advice, is normally a very, and maybe in this case even, is a responsible meteorologist. And he may have put his advice in context where it was because of the fear engendered by the Moore tornado 10 days before or whatever. Maybe it was heated too well, more than he had in mind or something, but that may have been a an outlier event. I mean, I wonder whether all TV meteorologists out in the Midwest have learned from that and will be very cautious about what they do and how they advise people. You know, that must be going to be a big topic at the next TV meteorologist convention, I would think. But I mean, do you think that?
Yeah, and I don't want to bash that guy. I mean, heat of the moment, it sounds like a good idea, but it really doesn't work in an urban area. If you're in a little town where there's no traffic in the middle of nowhere and you can drive at right angles away from the tornado, I mean, again, if there's no traffic, that actually isn't terrible advice. But if you're in an urban area where you have potentially tens of thousands of cars on the road at once trying to escape a storm that is moving a little bit unpredictably, then obviously you're going to have problems. But yeah, it's already a huge topic of conversation in social media and online. And I think that the people involved in emergency management on up are going to be talking about this.
I think tornado warnings are gradually getting better. I think that the radars and the software and the ability to determine exactly what's going on a fine scale and maybe to forecast and predict path a little bit is getting better, but it's still far from perfect, obviously. What do you think is the main problem, the lack of safe shelters? I mean, is that the main thing out there that that would save lives?
Warnings are really good, and we all get frustrated when we hear, you know, the easy headline, it came without warning, because generally these things come with a lot of warning. If people paid more attention, if everybody had a weather radio, which I strongly encourage, they're not very expensive. You can program it to your area to alert you whenever there's an issue, a tornado, a severe storm, a flood. All of those things will help. A lot of it's just information. And sure, shelters are obviously a point of debate, especially because a couple of schools were hit in that first Moore tornado in 2013. Mm-hmm. And, you know, with tragic results. And so, of course, having a good shelter is the ideal situation. But being informed is also really important.
Well, we're getting to the end of our show. Let me just give Chris's website addresses again. ChrisKreidler.com, ChrisKreidler.com is one where she describes her books. And again, the Storm Seekers series. The first two books are called Funnel Vision and, more recently, Tornado Pinball. And these are books about chasing storms and tornadoes in particular. And very interesting, well-written, well-done page-turner-type books, you know, so I recommend them. Her sister's site, where it focuses more on her beautiful photography, is called skydiary.com. These are stories and photos that she takes, that Chris takes out there in Tornado Alley. So skydiary.com. Just quickly, in the last few seconds we have, is it easier to make a living doing this than it was 10 years ago, let's say, with the increase in interest on the part of TVs and so on?
Well, interest is definitely up. There's more and more people shooting video, shooting pictures, sharing stuff for free. So it's not exactly a paying gig most of the time. So I would say not yet, but at least there's a lot of interest in storms now.
Well, Chris, I want to thank you so much for being on with us on American Variety. It's been very interesting.
Thank you so much. It's great to talk to you.
You too. And thanks to all of you out there for listening. I hope you'll tune in again next week, same time, same place, for more American Variety Radio.